Jackson, Topeka, and the Santa Fe.
All aboard, she's on her way.
See the old smoke rising round the bend. I reckon that she knows she's gonna meet a friend. Folks around these parts get the time of day. From the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe.
Here she comes.
Ooh, 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 ooh.
Hey, Jim, you better get the rig.
Ooh, 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 ooh.
She's got a list of passengers that's mighty big.
And they'll all want lifts to Brown's Hotel. Cause lots of them been traveling for quite a spell. All the way from Philadelphia, on the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe.
Welcome everyone to another edition of Community in Depth. I love that music. And we are going to talk about the railroad today with historian Spencer Johnson. How are you, Mr. J?
I'm really, really fine.
You are really fine. Tell me about your pandemic lifestyle.
Well, I just recently retired, so I don't all have all the stresses trying to figure out how to, do my job or to do online school stuff, Schoology. And I know that was coming anyway. I mean, we were talking about doing a lot of online stuff anyway for snow days, but boy, they're feet to the fire now. I've been cleaning some stuff up and sorting through some things, getting rid of stuff, riding my bike, a little bit of fishing here and there. But it was the bike ride that kind of got me started on what I was going to talk about. There's a really nice trail. It's called the Point Douglas Regional Trail. Goes from Highway 61 just across the bridge over by Grouse Construction over to Prescott. It's about 2.5 miles one way, which is not a bad ride at all.
Is this the new one that just went in a couple years ago?
Yeah, it is. It just went in a couple years ago. So, from my house, it takes me 30, 35 minutes to get to Prescott. Once I'm on the trail, you don't have to cross any roads. There's actually an underpass under Highway 10 over by Prescott. And then, boom, you're at the Washington County Beach, the park there. It's a really nice trail. And it was built basically on an old railroad bed, which is what got me thinking about what to talk. I've always been a train fan, a rail fan for a long time. And when I was a kid, I used to ride my bike. And again, don't tell my mom, but I would just go out to the railroad tracks and then walk along the tracks or find a trail, see how far I could go and just explore the railroads a little bit. But, in Hastings, Leduc, before the Civil War, was trying to get a railroad started. He was an entrepreneur like a lot of people. And there was a lot of trouble getting the trains started. People were all for it, but moving the money in the right place and getting the state land and the federal government to do some things. So nothing really happened much before the American Civil War.
When Mr. Leduc was looking into that, where was the railroad at that time? Was it?
Yeah, the closest train was at Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin.
So he was trying to get it up here and then go west, or?
Yes, exactly. Okay. The ticket would be to, and again, this is before, the Transcontinental Railroad. That was a big federal project that Lincoln kept pushing. During the Civil War, with everything else going on, he says, we got to keep pushing this railroad to get from California to St. Louis. I mean, we need to, it's infrastructure even then, to keep that moving. But everybody, north and south, are trying to figure out how to get trains. If you could figure out how to get from Seattle or San Francisco or Los Angeles, those major ports, and get, rail transportation back and forth.
Is that the problem? Was money?
Yeah, money. There's a little bit of politics in there and things like that. It's kind of a tough thing, It's just like anything else. We see like a big project going up, not knowing everything that had happened, behind the scenes to try to get it going. But again, during the Civil War, things were kind of put on hold for some reason. Part of it was the plies and the manpower to get the trains built. I mean, the war was going on, so there's certainly a lot of trains and railroads being built down during the Civil War and used during the Civil War. But when the war was over, Leduc again started putting some pressure on the state legislature and applied for or reapplied to get a railroad going. And his idea is if he could get out to Seattle, that would really make Hastings, St. Paul too, but Hastings, a great big transportation route. He's going to start what's going to at first be called the Hastings and Dakota Railroad.
Wow.
It never really went as far as it was could have or maybe should have. But, just like everything else, it takes a little while to get things going. So in 1866, he kind of gets a renewal of the charter and gets some of the state legislature to allow for some of the land, and they start buying, you know, supplies, rails and ties and things like that. Now, we have a railroad depot down the old downtown. That was built in 1866, right off of Bailey Street. There's a little street right over there that's, you know, named after Alexis Bailey. And that whole area used to be called Market Square. And that depot burned in 1884, was rebuilt, and it's still there today. But, of course, it's not taking passengers.
Oh, that we have now was built in 1884?
Well, it was probably redone after that.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Parts of it were built in 1884. If you look at it, it looks like it's probably 1940s. But, yeah, then they last forever. They were really, really well built. Anyway, the Hastings Dakota Railroad, just like a lot of companies, are going to be bought and sold and bought and sold and merged into other things. So the names kind of changed. But there was a branch line from Hastings to Stillwater that the locals in Washington County oftentimes called the Peanut Line. It started in 1882. Work began on that. It's about 26 miles from Hastings to Stillwater along the St. Croix River. And it was a steam train up until the 1950s. But it would go up, you know, the towns that were up there. It would make stops at Afton and St. Mary's Point and St. Croix Beach and Lakeland and Hudson, up eventually Stillwater. Bayport, too. You know, Anderson Windows is up there, and they were doing a lot of business with that. So one of the biggest things that would move was ice, and we don't think about that industry much anymore, about harvesting ice. We talked about that a little bit before, but there was a great big ice company up the St. Croix a little further up. There was a big, big demand at the South St. Paul Stockyards for ice because, you know, they're butchering hogs.
Oh.
Yeah, and they had refrigerated railroad cars that one time did not have refrigeration in them. They had ice blocks and, you know, the need to move that through there. But the train would go along. There's still remnants of the trail down there. There's no track left, but a lot of it's on private land, and there's a kind of a push by the DNR to make it into a bike trail. Much like the bike trail that now goes from Hastings out towards Spring Lake Park, and eventually it's going to hook up with bike trails in South St. Paul and places like that.
Why did they call it the Peanut
Line? Well, this is a really good question. I mean, there's a couple different theories, and when I do my research, you know, that's the one thing that's kind of been one of the challenges. The library is opened again, but you can't go in. You can get books. If you get online and order books, they'll put them outside for you. But the Pioneer Room, you know, the city hall is not open. But there's one particular book that was written by a man named Ralph Henry in 1972. It's called The St. Croix Boyhood. And it's just his reminiscence about growing up in that area, up in Denmark Township. And so it might be the fact that sometimes it was just a small train, but other things I read said that the kids would come running to the train to see it. You know, that was a big, big deal if they could. And then the engineers would sometimes throw candy and peanuts out of the kids to eat.
Mm.
Now, you know, I read that in one place. It's a cool story. It's probably true, but I couldn't, you know, maybe some of our listeners can verify that. But it was called the Peanut Line for a long, long time. I talked to several people and said, yeah, I don't know why it was called the Peanut Line, but that's what I came up with, the fact that they would wave at kids and people would flick their lights on and off to wave at the engineer when the train came by. Anyway, very scenic along the St. Croix. And mostly it carried farm produce up to Stillwater and back down to Hastings, depending. Lots of hay bales. Anderson Windows use it quite a bit. Once in a while, they'd carry passengers. And when it was diesel, there was a photograph I found of a diesel train with the number 567. So they called it the 567. And it would leave Hastings about 6 p.m. and go all the way up to Stillwater and then come back. Lots and lots of ice was ending up going to the South St. Paul Stockyards.
And how would the ice get there?
It would come down. If you think about the way the river goes, it would come from Stillwater down towards Hastings, and then there's another line that goes up to South St. Paul.
Okay.
And those tracks are still there. You know, the track that runs from here, from Prescott to here, one of them branches into Hastings. Another one goes along the north side of the river.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, and again, the ice industry is something we don't think much about these days anymore.
No. What years would this have been?
Well, the thing starts up out in the 1880s. There's going to be, the ice was pretty much done by the 1950s, because by then we got more trucks hauling things, and then there's more, you know, electric refrigeration and things like that. the whole thing ends up, it stops in 1978. They decided that it wasn't really worth that. The railroad decided it really wasn't worth their time anymore to have that line going. You know, just like a lot of passenger service kind of stopped in the 1970s because more people had cars, more people were traveling on planes. It wasn't a thing to travel on trains very much anymore. And if you remember, today you can travel on Amtrak, and that was the government's effort to keep some railroad transport, people traveling on trains going. And something the post office is a government-run passenger line for...
Amtrak is?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's not necessarily run by the government, but it's just the only one that there is. So it was just, it was kind of a decision by the government. We're going to keep one line going. And it's kind of fun. I've ridden on the Amtrak just a couple of times from here to Chicago, and it's just kind of a fun experience to do that.
It is. We've done that as well, and it's amazing how fast the time goes, and it's so relaxing.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times it's scenic. What I haven't done, and it's on my list, is to go out to either Seattle or Portland, Oregon. And apparently you get on the train in St. Paul in the evening, and you sleep through most of North Dakota. Wow. And then wake up in Montana and get to see Glacier National Park. So,
yeah. Well, you put that on your bucket list.
Well, it's been on my bucket list for a long time.
You better get going, historian Spencer Johnson.
That's true. Yeah, time is ticking. Yeah.
So what else do you want to tell us about trains? So whatever became of Mr. LaDuke? Did any of his railroad dreams come true?
Well, no and yes. He eventually sold his interest in that. I don't know that he did really well with it, and I'm not really sure the details of that. I know that when he was quite a bit older, after his wife had died, the widow, I have to think of the name of the Civil War general's name, and LaDuke was an officer in the Civil War, but there was another general had died, and his widow had given LaDuke quite a bit of money, she knowing that he kind of got the raw end of a deal, you know, earlier in the 1870s when he sold out his interests in it and didn't, you know, and then see what ends up happening. And then, of course, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it gets folded into other lines. But LaDuke is one of these guys that I think today he'd be involved in internet businesses. He's always trying to figure out what the cutting edge of he's an entrepreneur, like ideas for businesses. Always, what's the next new thing, you know, looking to the future and maybe not thinking so much about building a foundation for the business. Just, you know, what's the next thing that's going to come up? And when you go to LaDuke House, that's part of their story. So he was a good person, but maybe not as business savvy as he had hoped to be. But, you know, the railroad kept on going. There were lines, and Hastings, Dakota had lines that went out to Farmington and then eventually to western Minnesota. And that, too, was a passenger thing that you could get on a train for a long time up until the 1950s, you know, and take little short routes out there. Not everybody had automobiles back in the 30s and the 40s.
Was it pretty inexpensive for people, or was it a luxury to take the train?
Well, that's a really good question. I don't know. I found some references to the fees, and it's like, you know, 25 cents, 30 cents, 40, 50 cents, you know, to get out past Farmington out that direction. But now that's relative, and at the time, and how much really was that? You know, I guess I couldn't say that compared to the price of a loaf of bread or a gallon of gasoline. I don't know.
Okay.
But, you know, it was probably something that not a menial amount, but at the same time doable. You know, it's kind of like when you take a cab or an Uber. I mean, it's affordable, but at the same time, it's not cheap. It's just something you do because you have to do that.
So those lines all closed up?
Yeah, well, mostly in the 70s. I mean, by the 50s, they weren't doing much for passenger trains. The railroad that we had, again, it eventually goes out to Glencoe and Ortonville, Minnesota. That's Ortonville's out there by the edge of the Dakotas. Two passenger coaches, and they described as having oil lamps, a stove, and a heat, a little teeny, small little engines to go out there. Steam engines, are, of course, kind of interesting because you're either using coal or wood, and you have to stop for water all the time, and it's kind of a high-maintenance thing compared to diesel. But, of course, there's a bit of an ambiance to the whole thing. So the guys that ran this peanut line, they said that I read a newspaper interview that said, well, when it changed from steam to diesel, it kind of lost some of the fun. You still can blow a whistle on a diesel engine, but it's just maybe a little different. And,
yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
America certainly has not lost its love of trains, though. There's something magical about trains, I think.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and last summer, I'm trying to think of the name of it. There was a big steam engine called the Big Boy that came through. It was coming from out when I say west, it was somewhere in Kansas or Nebraska and going to Chicago and back. And I had an appointment somewhere up by Pine City, but I wanted to see this train come, and I figured out online where it was going to go through, and it had a schedule going, and I'm not going to go to St. Paul. It's just going to be crazy there. I'm somewhere up in Oakdale. I just pulled over, and there's all these people standing by the railroad crossing for the same reason I was. Mm. They were waiting, and people are like texting their friends who are in St. Paul saying, well, it's delayed, and everybody's waiting for that photo opportunity for that steam train to come by. It was really, really cool to see people's enthusiasm. And then when it came by, you know, it was chug, and the smoke's coming out, and they pull the whistle at just, I think, for entertainment value there. It was just really, people are just loving that kind of, and it wasn't just a lot of old guys. There was a lot of old guys. There were a lot of young people or parents with kids that wanted them to see that also.
Mm-hmm. Well, that train museum in St. Paul is very fun if you've ever been there.
Yeah, the Jackson Street Roundhouse.
Yes.
That's a good one.
Yes.
That's a really good one there.
And
you know, and the thing is, Roundhouse, we had one of those in Hastings. So where it's something called a turntable, and diesels can go back and forth. It doesn't really matter. They don't have to turn around. Steam trains do a little bit better if they're just going one direction. So what they would do is you would have where the railroad depot is, and that area was called Market Square at one time, and pretty much where there's a parking lot there now, and there's a little bit of a lumber yard and a little playground. There was a three-bay roundhouse, so the train will go on to this great big turntable, like a Lazy Susan, it could be turned around. Most of the ones I've seen, you just stand there and turn a crank and turn, it's balanced really, really well. So you got this, you know, like 60-ton steam locomotive that you're turning in around, and they would be backed into these garages, these bays in the roundhouse, and maintenance would be done, and if they're not using, they can keep warm in the wintertime. So we had that for a long time, probably up until, well, I don't know, maybe the 30s or the 40s when that one was taken down. But those are kind of neat things to see. And so the one up in St. Paul, the Jackson Street one, you get to go inside that, and they're doing some train restoration. It's a great place to bring kids if they like trains. And when I was there a few years ago in the summer, you went out and you got to ride. There was you either in a caboose or a small little diesel engine. You got a little 10-minute ride, which is pretty fun.
Yeah, that is pretty fun. We did that as well. We did it a couple years in a row for our son's birthday. So fun. Yeah, we really learned a lot today. Thank you. Historian Spencer Johnson, we always love it when you chatted up with us. I can't wait to see you in person, though, because I bet you would have had, if you would have come in today, you would have had an engineer cap and I don't know what else, a little bandana.
Yeah, dressed it up. Yeah. Well, I could have sent you a picture, but, you know, I've been busy goofing off. It's a strange existence that we're living right now. And
I
even
know.
Being retired, this is just odd.
It is. It is odd.
But, you know, this too shall pass. We just have to be patient and kind to each other, and this will pass eventually. And, you know, what doesn't kill us makes us stronger.
Okay, I love that. Thank you so much for calling in today. We always enjoy it. Historian Spencer Johnson, and you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7 KDWA in Hastings.
Number 49, she's the only one that